Each morning we are born again. What we do today is what matters most. Buddha. Hope with Depression, the podcast.
It's never out of laziness, it's pure dread for the day ahead. An ongoing battle which constantly waits at my feet. The same one as yesterday I crawled my way through to defeat. My only escapism I encounter is when I'm sleeping, yet so often I still feel the depression creep in.
We want to share first-hand accounts, learnings, solutions, the latest knowledge, and therapies available. Because right now, if you're stuck in the dark tunnel of depression, you need a guiding light at the end of the tunnel, and that's what we're going to give to you.
Mental health matters a lot.
It is really important to me that people do know that recovery is possible.
I can occasionally be persuaded to venture for a walk, but I pray I don't bump into anyone and have to talk. Sometimes I catch familiar faces I haven't seen in a while, but I never set loose of the truth. I just stand there and smile. I do wonder if they can ever tell, but then again, I know my mask hides me well.
A lot of people have felt so low for so long that they think that that's how their life should be.
And interestingly, they probably think that's how life is for everybody.
Yes.
Because we tend to generalise our experience. We tend to think, if I feel this way, the world is this way.
Yes.
I am me again. I love me. I love my heart now and I love living. I love and enjoy everything about me. I feel good about myself and I have the courage to share with other people my experience, especially when they seek advice or ask me how I managed to get out. The more I share, the stronger I have become and more empowered. It's nothing to be ashamed of. I feel like I won a huge battle for myself. I defeated depression. It has nothing on me. I'm happy.
Hello, Judith Cocking. How are you?
I'm very well, sir. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Thank you so much for being on our Hope with Depression podcast.
My pleasure.
You are one of the contributors to the book.
Yeah, I am indeed, yes. Very
okay.
Pleased to do that.
Now, I really don't know where to start with you because you've got such an absolutely incredible heritage and history. I think we could be here for hours just going through one of the things that you've done. And I want to give the listeners all, you know, I want to really pick your brain and get the best bang for buck for everyone listening.
Sure.
Where do we start? So, Hope with Depression is the book. You were a contributor there.
Yes.
How does your work help people with depression or depression-related illnesses? Let's start there, shall we?
I think in the course of my coaching work, and I've been coaching for about 16 years now, I come across a lot of people with, I would say, either mild depression or undiagnosed depression.
Mm.
And for me, I think you need to caveat this by saying, I think people with serious depression need to be under medical supervision.
For sure.
And I would always tell somebody if I felt that they needed to do that. But I think I do a lot of work in the corporate space, and a lot of my clients are really quite highly stressed. Or even if they're not highly stressed, they are still suffering from some stress. And I think stress is a precursor often to depression. And really, I help people almost step back from the precipice, if you like, of moving further into depression because of their stressful situation. So I think a lot of my clients wouldn't necessarily identify that. They certainly weren't coming to see me because they were depressed.
How do people react if you say, I think you're depressed? Do people get a bit, sort of a bit, not, no, I'm not, but, you know, a bit offended maybe?
I haven't had that, actually. A lot
Good.
Of people said, I have been to see my doctor,
yeah.
Or, I am actually on antidepressants, or, yes, I have been feeling so bad that I think I need to go and see somebody, and it's interesting that you've pointed that out. But I think also for me, I think that life's got fairly, crazy out there, and,
yeah.
And people are under a lot of pressure from multiple sources, and it's quite difficult to switch your brain off these days because you've bombarded left, right and centre with devices, telly, media, 24/7 economy.
Mm.
And that in itself can just lead people to burnout. And then from a corporate perspective, you know, organisations are starting to switch onto this whole issue of resilience And I think resilience is a fundamental part of helping to prevent depression, and also help build people's confidence in moving out of depression.
Because that was going to be my next question. Because every time you say something about four more brilliant total, avenues of possibility for exploration spring into my mind.
Yeah.
So is it about removing the stressor, or is it about increasing or is it about evolving our response to stress so we manage it better, or both?
I think it's both.
Okay.
I mean, and for me, I think there's a lot of work done in a remedial sense, because people are, well, almost the health service as well is kind of set up to fix people once they're broken. And you know, that's important, of course it is. But I'm also interested in helping people not get to the point that they're broken.
I mean, you hardly ever hear about people sort of applying preventative maintenance to their bodies, let alone to their minds.
I mean, they're intrinsically linked. You can't separate the
body. Of course they are. And it seems crazy that we've never really thought about this, but we're just starting, I guess, to, you know, I suppose, you know, with, health consciousness and all this sort of thing, lots of veganism, you know, all the kind of health things around. We're starting to pay more attention, you know, to the body, but in a preventative maintenance sense.
Yeah.
But the first time I actually considered preventative maintenance for the mind was when I had a little chat with you 3 days ago before, you know, when we agreed to do this interview, and I thought, what an amazing concept. And then I thought, well, why is this not being done? Or is it? Is it just off my radar?
I mean, it is. I think it's being done in pockets, and the movement is growing. And there are organisations that I think are taking this very seriously now. And well-being is kind of a buzzword in the corporate space. Stress and depression are often physiological responses. They're not just mental responses. And cortisol has been, you know, it's been shown that cortisol can play a huge part in the development of depression.
Well, we're on constant fight or flight, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly.
And there's no parasympathetic nervous system to rest and digest. It's constant go, 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 go.
Yes.
I mean, I relate to burnout. I had a burnout fairly recently, actually. I'm just on much better now.
Yeah.
But I can relate. And I can easily understand why it's so big in the corporate world. Oh, so much to talk to you about.
And I think, you know, people also, sometimes it's just an educational process, actually. It's about helping people to recognise the signs that they are approaching burnout.
Well, let's do that first, and then let's talk about what you do in the remedial sense, and then we'll talk about the coaching and the going forward sense, because you cover it from all angles, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
So what are the signs? What would flag for you in a corporate or any environment that you could tell, you could think, actually, that person's depressed? How would you know?
Well, I mean, I've seen it in a corporate sense, but I've also seen it from a personal perspective, because I've got family members and friends that have suffered or are currently suffering from depression, and I think it's a very tricky illness. But actually, talking to all of them, you can often see that there were triggers that were leading up to that, or signs that things were not going according to plan. I think sleep is often one of the things. Disrupted sleep is a very good sign that somebody may kind of tip over the edge into depression. I think where people start to rely on things like alcohol, drugs, cigarettes, or even, you know, overindulgence in the gym, for example, which is theoretically a healthy thing. But anything you start doing obsessively is a good sign that things might not be quite working as they should be. And also people, something that you have historically found incredibly easy to do, and you can, you know, whip a report out in 20 minutes, and suddenly you get to the point where you're taking hours and it's just not coming together.
I can relate to that one.
Absolutely a sign.
Yeah, I can relate to that one when I burnt out. I mean, even making a cup of tea seemed like a gargantuan task.
Exactly.
People
get to the point where, you know, just getting out of bed can be really, really hard. I had examples of a client saying to me that she was leaving work actually having to hold on to the walls of buildings because she was so exhausted and feeling so faint to get herself to the station get home.
Oh, dear. I mean, that's not good. That's not
healthy. Well, no, that's of course not. that's not good, and it's miserable. I mean, and the fact is, once you've got to that point, your system is flooded with cortisol. Your amygdala is kind of out of control, and your access to your frontal cortex is kind of offline.
Yes, understood.
So, you know, from a personal perspective, it's really hard for that person to get themselves out of that situation without help.
So how would you help them do it?
Well, for me, heart math, so the whole piece about helping somebody build their resilience, is a really good place to start if somebody is actually already suffering from depression or so stressed that they're finding it hard to make even the simplest decision. Heart math is a really good tool for helping people to reduce their cortisol levels and get their parasympathetic nervous system back in some balance.
Let's just have a little listen to some heart math audio.
Can you hear me? Can you feel me? This is a story about your life and about new ways to see that we are all connected.
Just like electricity changed the outer world, heart's going to change the inner world.
We can take charge of how we feel more than we may think.
It allows me to be present, centered, and focused.
I just find that deeper place in myself where I can feel that sense of love.
And as more people come together, it's going to draw in a whole new awareness.
But the heart really is an access point to our larger self that can bring in that intelligence of another dimension.
So now we're starting to have a scientific understanding that these higher quality emotions that people have always associated with the heart really do affect the way the heart beats and the quality of the neural signals being sent to the brain, which it then interprets.
Heart and brain are in constant communication. The heart is doing most of the talking.
You'll learn to listen to and follow the magnificent intuitive presence of your heart.
It's heart time on the planet.
And it's really, the thing I like about heart math is it doesn't really require any thinking. It's not difficult. It's just about, you know, regulating your breathing to start with. At its very most straightforward level, it's about, you know, looking at your heart-focused breathing to get your body back on some sort of even keel.
And I suppose if you're working with someone, if you build a heart-to-heart connection, I don't mean in the romantic sense, but just in a empathic human sense, it makes the situation a lot easier for you as the teacher or therapist, isn't it?
Absolutely it does.
Yeah.
And it puts them in a place where they're ready to work.
Because if their internal state isn't right, it won't, no matter how good you are, it won't land, will it?
No. That might be as far as you want to go in a session. You just say, OK, that's all we're doing today. Go off and practice.
Shall we try it? Do you want to try it? Do you want to try it live on the show? A bit of heart math.
Well, we can do.
See if you can soothe my cynical black heart.
It might be quite boring. Boring radio.
No, not at all.
Have you done it?
I've read the book, and I must admit, it joined the shelf help movement for a while.
Okay.
But I do know about there's the heart math lock-in, isn't there?
Yes.
And there's the freeze frame.
Yes. Well, let's do a lock-in.
Come on, then.
So all I want you to do to start with is just focus on your heart and imagine that you're almost breathing through in and out of your heart, and try and slow your breathing down. So it needs to feel comfortable, but imagine that you're kind of breathing in for five and out for five. There's no holding of breath or anything like that. So that's just the first stage in the process, which is really, hopefully, quite straightforward to do.
Yeah, got that.
And sometimes if you place your hand on your heart, it helps you to focus in that area as well.
It gets you out of your head, basically.
Yes, it gets you out of your head. And actually, even if all you do, if you do nothing else than focus on your heart and your breathing, it's really hard to think about anything, which is great because we want people to get out of their heads, really. So that's the first stage in the process. And then if you can overlay that, if almost breathe in and breathe out gratitude and appreciation, and that can be for anything. So try that.
What springs to mind? I'm grateful that I'm talking to you. I'm grateful that this information is being shared. I'm grateful that I'm comfortable at a nice temperature. I'm grateful that all my bodily functions are working well. I can understand what you're saying and then relate it back to you and operate the equipment here at the same time, so I can do the multitasking and all that sort of thing. So five things, simple things, just to be grateful for.
Yeah, it's very very straightforward. And actually, some people, and I do this, I almost feel with that gratitude and appreciation, there's almost a feeling of bright light going in and out at the same time. So when I breathe in, I feel warmth in the area of my chest.
So you feel it on an energetic level as well?
I feel it on an energetic level as well.
Oh, that is really fascinating, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, heart math have been going for ages, haven't they?
Yes, they have. Yes, they have. I mean, it's all started in California.
As they all do.
As they all do. But, there's some really nice technology behind it as well.
Oh, without a doubt. Because the heart field extends further than any other of our energetic fields, doesn't it? Is it like 5 foot out, 5 foot circumference?
I mean, there's some really quite wacky stuff out there, actually. But the experiments that we were doing on Sunday, there's a husband and wife team.
Experiments on Sunday? What is this witchcraft? Tell me more.
See, this was heart math experiments looking at...
You went to some sort of seminar, did you?
It was... They asked for volunteers because they wanted to collect some more data. So these guys have done experiments between the two of them.
Come on, then. What did you do? Did they wire you up?
They did. Well, we wired up to an app that's been built by this chap. And some people went with, friends or partners. So there was a pre-existing relationship already there. But also some people were, had not met before. And I worked with a lovely lady called Maria. And our data was put up on the day, and it's absolutely remarkable how much we synchronized, even when we weren't facing each other, and not even necessarily fully tuning into each other. It was really fascinating to see how it worked.
That would suggest that our natural state is to synchronize with each other, isn't
Yes,
it?
And you can see that, if you think about one of the most natural relationships, you look at a mother and baby, for example, and there's loads of studies around the fact that the mother and the baby's heart rates will synchronize. They've done studies with children and their animals, dogs and boys and... stuff like that. This couple had actually even done it remotely, so they might have been tens or hundreds of miles apart and still managed to get a synchronized pattern.
Isn't that fascinating?
It's unbelievable.
Isn't that fascinating? I mean, science is basically backing up spiritual truths if it's all sort of one, isn't it? And now we're getting the science to prove it. I mean, it's very exciting times in that sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you would put someone in a good heart state, you'd relax your client, you create a good heart connection with them.
Once they've gone through that process, it tends to put their mind in a much freer space, so they are able to be more creative about the sort of things that are going to help them move forward.
Okay.
And we'd start with fairly small goals, and then as they felt more able and, then they'd move onto possibly more complex things. I mean, the last person you're going to do with somebody who's depressed is say, well, what's your 5-year plan?
Yeah.
But it might be, what would make your day just a little bit better? What action can you take every day?
Yeah.
So that's the level of goal planning. I mean, if you look at the section I did for Lynn in the book, I think there's something called the Wheel of Life, which gets people to think about the 8 things that are kind of most important to them. And having done the sort of heart math lock-in, they're able to think more clearly about what those might be and also identify little steps that can take them from maybe being a 2 out of 10 to a 3 out of 10. So we're not talking revolution here, we're talking evolution.
Well, I like that. There's one for the fridge. Brilliant.
And then also to start thinking about what are their core values. Because it's amazing how many people have never really thought about what's important to them. And if you kind of dig down and find out what's making them unhappy, often it's because they're in an environment that's really at odds with what it is that what's meaningful to them.
Because we've all got to create our personal meaning, haven't we? And if we're just using a job as a means to an end, yeah, it's practical, it's responsible, blah blah blah, yawn yawn yawn. But it's not your passion, is it? It's not. I'm just looking at the Wheel of Life now, and it's eight segments of life: family, career, health, fitness, friends, hobbies, house, and fun.
I mean, it could be whatever. They're just examples.
Yeah,
it's whatever's meaningful to you.
But what you're wanting is a nice smooth wheel. You know, we're not wanting a sort of a jagged wheel.
Exactly, because it doesn't run very well.
Exactly.
It's out of kilter.
And then I see. You know, they set themselves manageable targets, such as to take action to move. Let's say friends. From a 3 to a 5, rather than trying to achieve a 10 in everything, because that's another bit of an indictment on our society. Everything's got to be 10 out of 10. It's got to be 10 out of 10 now, you know.
Well,
and someone
exactly.
who's depressed and burnt out, that just ain't so, is it?
No. And I think it's also hopefully encourages people to... They don't have to necessarily do this themselves. They could... One of their actions might be to ask for help. Or seek out other people, or start to think about what resources really are available to them.
Yeah, and it's perfectly okay to do that. You don't have to do it all yourself. Let's have a listen to some feedback from one of your clients.
The relationship has been very beneficial in helping me understand more about myself and how my deep-set feelings and fears can affect the way in which I operate. There has definitely been a positive change in me which can be attributed to the coaching experience with Judith.
Hope with Depression, the podcast, streaming now on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher for Android, Spotify, Google Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, and here. Play Hope with Depression, the podcast.
I mean, I think the other thing is that what people often don't do is they don't define what success means to them. Society is very good at saying success is all about money, about position, you know, and that's not necessarily right for everybody.
No, it's not. An interesting take on it I heard, it's from the field of NLP, is that success is a verb, it's not a thing, it's not a noun, it's not something you can hold, it's a process, it's a verb. You're not experiencing the thing called success, you are successing, as it
yes.
were.
Yes, I think that's right.
Yeah, it's an ing, not a thing, is a phrase I coined.
It's a bit like emotional intelligence, actually. I think emotional intelligence is a verb.
Because you do a lot of that as well. You do emotional intelligence work, don't you? Tell us a little about that. Does that help with depression?
I think it's quite hard to be emotionally intelligent when you're depressed, actually.
Go on.
But because it's emotional depression, rather, is naturally quite self-focused. That's almost a protection mechanism, I think.
They call it a selfish disease, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then people think they're selfish, which adds an even another layer of self-loathing, which is absolutely... And it just spirals even further.
Not great. But I mean, I think emotional intelligence is two parts. People always think that emotional intelligence is how good you are at dealing with other people, how good your relationship management skills.
Mm.
But it's not just that. It's about how good you are about... working, understanding yourself and managing yourself as well. And I think that's what gets neglected. And often people get to the point where they're, you know, super stressed or depressed because they've neglected themselves. There's some evidence that suggests that women are more inclined to do that than men, actually.
Well, I would believe that because women do tend to be more overgiving.
Yes.
Yeah, give, and then it
yes.
doesn't come back or doesn't come back in the way they expect it to.
And then, well, they've given so much that they can't keep doing it.
I mean,
they crash and burn.
One of my favourite phrases is you can't give from an empty
desire
cup.
Desire to help other
right.
people.
You have to fill your own cup first.
If you don't do the same for yourself. And actually the cornerstone of emotional intelligence is about self-regard. So working to really genuinely like yourself.
And allowing it to be okay to feel what you feel, because if you feel something and then you say, I shouldn't be feeling that,
yes.
that's a kind of level of self-abandonment, and it's the complete opposite of what you're trying to achieve, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you feel what you feel.
Yeah, and there's no wrong in any of it.
There's no wrong in any of it. And I think, you know, that's where emotional intelligence and resilience and the whole heart math piece really link well together.
Yeah, it all does fit together very well, doesn't it? Definitely.
Absolutely.
And you do PsyTap as well. Now, what is PsyTap?
Well, PsyTap was developed by Kevin Lay, And he
Facebook friended me the other day.
Oh, did he?
He did.
All right. He's an engineer by background. So, Kevin's kind of modus operandi is to take stuff that's out there and make it even better.
Like it.
So his site app is about taking... He has amended or bettered things like TFT, so thought field therapy, which is about tapping, and EMDR, and taking that onto the next level to get better results, really. And I quite like that. Those techniques can be incredibly useful for people with depression because they don't require a lot of action by the individual.
And I suppose, making an effort and taking action is the last thing you want to do when you're depressed.
Yes, and I think any kind of mental illness or challenge, whether it's depression or anxiety, and actually two often go really
hand in hand, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
People, you can't talk somebody rationally out of that. It doesn't work that way.
No.
And therefore, having a kit bag that's got a number of tools and techniques, including the site app piece, can be really useful in reducing people's anxiety.
It's so reassuring to know that there are these tools out there and wonderful practitioners like yourself, so help is there. Because I think the first thing about depression, it just feels so isolating. You feel like you're the only one ever. And if you look on Facebook, everyone's having an amazing life apart from you. And all, social media doesn't help. We cover that
Not at all.
We cover that in detail in a future episode.
Good.
Believe me.
It needs to be.
Oh, we're going to get our teeth into that one. Believe you me. Yeah. But it's just so good to know that help is out there, and you're not alone. I think the first, it's got a name, it's a diagnosis. Phew, I'm not going mad. Second, I'm not alone. Three, there is help out there. So once you've done the remedial stuff, and this all sounds fantastic, and I love your term of mental preventative maintenance.
Yeah.
And all these tools are good for that as well, are they?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
Do you have a little ritual that you do every day?
Do I have a little?
A ritual where you set yourself up for the day. I mean, how does Judith start her day to have a good day?
Well, I'm not religious about it, actually.
Right.
Because I mean, I know some people might be, but I'm human. Mm-hmm. So, stuff gets in the way. The dog or the sun or something gets in the way.
Oh, because that's never happened to anyone else ever. Like,
but I am. There's. I do often do a piece of work with groups that I work with.
Oh, wonderful.
What your internal dialogue has a huge impact on how you greet the world and. How you come across to other people. And I do a little exercise with people where I get them to, I try and push their arm down, so they have to put their arm out to the side.
Oh, they're muscle testing, yeah.
So I do it twice. First time they say out loud, strong and powerful, over and over again, and second time I get them to do weak and tired. And it has never failed me, that little party trick. And I can, especially if you've got a good strapping lad up there, I can never push their arm down on the first go, and I can always get their arm right down to the bottom on the second go.
Brilliant.
And it just shows you what your internal dialogue has.
The
impact it has on
what we're telling ourselves and how it affects the mind and the body. I'm mindful of your time. Thank you so much for your contribution. Just very quickly, I'm going to find out where people can find out more about your work. But you would coach people one-on-one, and because I think maybe moving towards I heard the term BHAD, big, hairy, audacious goal.
Oh, yes.
And moving people to something that's so damn exciting, does that sometimes help depression pale into a little bit more insignificant?
As long as somebody's in a position to be able to think that big.
Understood, yeah.
I think, having something to aim for and genuinely believing you can get there is an excellent way of moving somebody out of, the depths of despair.
But softly.
So almost, if you go too big, you can actually make it worse.
That I understand, yeah, because it becomes another insurmountable mountain where even making a cup of tea could be an insurmountable mountain. So the last thing you need, it all depends on where they're at, doesn't it?
It does, completely.
Yeah, completely, and it takes... talented practitioners like yourself to be able to identify people, then lead them in the direction where you both want to go.
So, I do group work on resilience and the whole piece of preventative or approach to preventing stress, burnout, depression.
And so important nowadays. Where can people learn more about your work and get in touch with you, Judith?
So you can find me on at pluspartnership.com or email me at judithcocking@pluspartnership.com.
Okay.
So I'd be delighted to hear from anybody.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And thank you for your wonderful contribution to the book. And thanks for being on the podcast too. It's been a fantastic and an insightful interview. And I hope our paths cross again soon.
Yeah, me too, Neil.
All right, Judith Cocking, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our greatest glory is not in never falling, but in rising every time we fall. Confucius. Next time on Hope with Depression, the podcast.
Including the belief that they deserve to be heard.
Exactly.
And they deserve to be validated, because some people, strange as it might seem, or maybe it doesn't, maybe sadly it doesn't seem strange, people don't feel that they deserve to be heard. They don't, maybe they've not been in that environment all their life.
Yeah. Or they feel their problem doesn't validate someone else's ears, almost, that, oh, I'm just being silly, or where actually just having even a 5-minute chat with someone can make you feel, oh, okay, you know, perhaps I am feeling something here and I perhaps need to do something more, or that might be it.
We've had people walk by the door who've been interested and looked at our posters and thought, oh, you know, do I go in? It's this brave step of coming in, not really knowing what to expect. Basically, we are there, we welcome people through the door, we do go outside to chat to people if they're there and want to ask some questions, but it's just the opportunity, come and have a cup of tea, put a biscuit with us and sit down and have a talk to us.
It's essentially, it's giving people a sense of peace and the ability to create a life that they really love and to get out of that stuck place.
Hope with Depression, the podcast.